But I really don't have any regrets. I really don't. I've lived exactly how I've wanted to. I've tried my hardest every single time. I didn't win the matches that maybe I should have always won. But I really gave it my all, so that for me is enough.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to season 11 of The Body Serve. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm James.
You kind of jumped a little bit when
season
I said 11.
11? Oh, my God.
January 2015 is when we started. It is now January 2025. We've traveled down many roads over those 10 years.
Many rivers to cross.
And we can't seem to find our way over. Wandering to Australia... Djokovic lost.
What?
I'm carrying on the song.
Oh, okay. Really lost me there.
Before we get into that, as you all know by now, if you've been listening for the last few episodes, we've launched our GoFundMe. We are currently sitting at 74.2% of our goal, which is a moment very pleasing to us in our careers.
Yeah, thank you so much to everybody who has donated and shared and even thought about contributing. That counts too. We do not take this for granted. It's still kind of wild that this is a thing that happens, that folks are willing to help us produce this show.
Not going to lie, we were a little bit worried about if this could happen again, like in previous years. It looks like we're on track to meet the goal. It would be nice if we got there quicker, so it's less anxiety-inducing. But a very real thing has happened in the last few months where Twitter is no longer Twitter, nor do people seem to want to use Twitter, us included. Mm-hmm. Like, we feel very cute about even posting anything on Twitter anymore. And I think once this Australian Open is done, I think we will be done as well.
Probably. You know, we've migrated most of our operations to Blue Sky and Instagram, of course. Instagram, after all these years, is still not something I'm used to using. I don't really get how to generate audiences on Instagram.
I've always felt old using Instagram, and that hasn't changed.
Yeah, even when we were young.
Grr. But yeah, so the natural progression of sharing and advertising this GoFundMe, it's different because we didn't know if we'd still be able to reach people. Are people no longer online like they used to be, you know?
But it turns out you all are out there and we appreciate you continuing to listen to us after all these years.
As usual, if you've contributed $100 or more, send us your address. We will send you a postcard and two bookmarks. The designs for the bookmarks, by the way, have been decided on.
By whom?
You approved it. You even said one was so cute. You really liked it.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah. You know, new year, new me. I forgot everything that happened last year.
We came home from Christmas with my parents, and I opened one of my gifts. I mean, I'd unwrapped it, but I opened it to physically look at it. And you're like, where did you get that from? And I looked at you and I said, this is what you told my mother to buy for me?
True. True. You know what? Did you get it or not? I did my job.
Everything GoFundMe related can be found at linktree.com/thebodyserve. You could also just Google us plus GoFundMe. It'll be there too.
Yep. Open till the end of the Australian Open, as always. Do we have to talk about results? I guess we probably do.
This is your life goal, mission for this podcast. Well, to not have to ever talk about results.
Right. As you know, my 2025 season starts on January 1st, 2025. I do not watch premature tennis. So I've had to cram a little bit. I've had to catch up.
The first match I watched of the young season was one Nick Kyrgios losing.
To Giovanni Pecci-Perricard, right?
Correct.
And Nick and Novak have teamed up in doubles in Brisbane. I remember the days when Nick used to throw insults at Novak. The fam denies that it ever happened. But now that Nick is a Novak defender, they're like best friends, right? They're really tight. And everybody has forgotten what it used to be like when Nick used to accuse the big three of doping. Mm-hmm.
he's still accusing other people of doping.
Right.
But Novak gets...
It is pretty much an obsession at this point.
Novak is in a totally different space with Nick right now.
They did team up to win one match against a tough team, and then they lost in the match tiebreak to the number one seed Mekdich and Venus.
Novak in singles lost, quite surprisingly actually, to Riley Opelka. There's a name, there's a blast from the past.
Right? I mean, we have been rough on Riley over the years, and it wasn't unearned, but he's been through a lot as far as injuries, and I think we finally have more light on what he's been through. He spoke to Flagler Live, which is like a local outlet to where he's from, last year, and there's been more reporting since. Back in 2022, he had a benign tumor in his hip removed, and that surgery was successful. But then that was followed up by a very serious wrist problem. He had a surgery in 2023, which he considered failed. It resulted in an infection. He had to go back to the same surgeon, have another surgery to remove infected tissue. And then he developed nerve damage. He got this thing called thoracic outlet syndrome, which happens when the rib compresses nerves. It can happen in a few different ways, but that's what happened with him. And then he needed another surgery for the rib to be released, so there was no pressure on the nerves.
Mm-hmm. Now that we are in season 4 of The Resident on Netflix...
I know all this
You stuff. Are branching out from doping. You're going to be the on-call medical expert as well.
I mean, there's so many amateur doctors out there on Twitter. Like, what's one more?
You are the Dr. Conrad Hawkins of tennis.
Period.
Now, we mentioned it briefly somewhere at the end of last season that Andy Murray is going to be Novak Djokovic's coach in 2025. And this development in the new year, specifically on the heels of Novak losing to Riley Opelka, has tickled me pink endlessly. I've gotten so much enjoyment. It's my favorite story so far, and it's something that I hope will bring me endless entertainment throughout the rest of the Australian swing.
Sure, but what if he wins?
It hinges on Novak losing.
Okay.
But we have all these people who are Andy Murray stans, who that fandom did not intersect with Novak stans, by and large.
Maybe a little, right? Because Andy and Novak were friends.
Sure. But I'm just saying that I've seen quite a few people who were not Nole fans who now they've decided to leave the Democratic Party and register as independent. No, but this is what you register independent so you can do the fuckery while still maintaining some cover.
Oh, I see.
That's what happens in your people's politics.
Oh, sure. A number of Murray fans have become Nole stans. Mm-hmm. Maybe just gay for the stay. I don't know. Like, oh my god, cut that out.
Gay for the stay?
What I meant to say was maybe it's just a temporary allegiance.
Maybe
they... I really didn't mean that.
Maybe they like it and stay.
Perhaps. But Novak losing to Opelka was shocking. Riley also beat Petsche Pericard, who beat Nikirios in Brisbane. Rafa has ruined this city's name for me. I know how it's pronounced.
For the purposes of this show, let's just say Brisbane.
Okay.
It can be one of our TBS-isms.
Like Marailibon.
That one is harder for me.
Yes. Riley reached the Brisbane final, but had to retire versus Lehechka, down 1-4 in the first set with back issues. Hopefully this is precautionary. He said that the medical team was trying to move mountains to help him, but it wasn't going to happen.
There were a lot of retirements in the first week of the season, and a lot that we hope are just precautionary.
Yeah. I mean, this feels like a very compressed Australian swing, does it not?
I mean, it gets smaller and shorter every year. Wasn't there once an Adelaide 1 and an Adelaide 2?
Well, yeah, there were some changes due to COVID, but Australian Open qualifying has already started, and it's January 6th.
Comeback kid, Kei Nishikori, had a string of brilliant wins in Hong Kong.
Yeah, the fact that Kei Nishikori is 35 years old really shocked me.
That he's only 35?
No, that he's that old now. I kept thinking, oh, Kay has, even though he's been injured, he has so much more time.
He reached the U.S. Open final over 10 years ago at this point. I thought he was like 37, 38.
Oh.
And I honestly didn't think he had this kind of tennis still in him. He started the week by beating Denis Shapovalov in straight sets. Took out number 3 seed Karen Khachanov, 7-5 in the third. 3 sets again over Cam Nori. Semi-final against Jerry Shang. Kay was up 4-3 when Shang had to retire. And then in the final, blitzed through the first set, 6-2, before Mueller just found gear after gear after gear to win the next two sets, 6-1, 6-3.
Yeah, this is Mueller's first title here in Hong Kong. Kay has not reached a final since winning Brisbane 6 years ago, in 2019. He returns to the top 100 with this runner-up finish. He got himself from number 581 in July, just 6 months ago, to number 74 now. And a large part of that was winning the Helsinki Challenger to end 2024.
I kind of jumped past the women's event in Brisbane. That was won by Aryna Sabalenka. Put her in a hard court, she's going to make the semis at least.
I mean, put her in Australia, Queen of Australia. Last year, she lost the Brisbane final to Rybakina, remember, but then won the Australian Open, of course.
She beat qualifier Polina Kudermetova in the final, young 21-year-old. Heck of a week for her.
Yeah. In Auckland, we got 6 Americans in the quarterfinals.
6 Black Americans.
Yep. Plus Naomi, who was like kind of American.
Well, okay. That's doing a lot there.
Well, to navigate
around. No, I understand. I think the listeners could have figured that part out on their own.
Sure. But obviously, an amazing showing for Black women in Auckland. Osaka was clearly favored to win the title when she reached the final, but she was hampered by injury, and Clara Towson wins her third career title.
Osaka looked so good in that first set, winning it before having to retire in between sets. We were watching The Resident, and I said to you, we should put the match on.
Yeah,
you know,
we better turn this on.
And so we tune in after Naomi wins the first set, only to see hands being shaken. And you're like, why is Patrick there?
Why was Patrick there?
Because he's her coach.
What?
He's her coach.
Patrick Mouratoglou is
Naomi Osaka's coach. No longer women's set.
When did this happen?
Who is with Iga Świątek.
Did we report on this?
Possibly.
Probably.
Probably. Likely
literally,
so.
Literally, when did this happen?
Yeah.
And now I'm wondering, what is wrong with me? Do I have a medical problem?
I've been telling you about your memory for... I just chalked it up to general inattentiveness.
Right. You wouldn't believe the things that I can remember. But the things that I can forget are even more impressive.
Staggering.
Right. Right. Overall, the top players on the WTA had an incredible week. Like, what a way to kick off the season on the women's side. A title for Sabalenka, a title for Coco Gauff at United Cup. Iga Świątek gets big wins over Rybakina. Muchova, Bolter reaches the final in United Cup. Elena Rybakina helps her team Kazakhstan reach the semifinals in United Cup. Like, what a great start for the season.
United Cup, is that where we're at?
That's where we're at.
Coco Gauff continues her ascendance. Already at the top, but continues to get better and show improvement. We saw that when she won the WTA finals at the end of last year after having that string of good results in Asia. And now she won all her matches at United Cup, including a second consecutive straight set win over Iga Świątek. The head-to-head is now 3-11.
That's wild. But, I mean, there was a time where even winning a set against Iga was going to be a huge achievement. But now winning 2 matches against Iga, Brad Gilbert and Coco Gauff were probably just not a great fit. Because we have seen a lot of progress. She's with the Grip MD, the Grip coach, the forehand has improved. I mean, it's just an exciting time to be a Coco Gauff fan.
Perhaps that's not fair to Brad and Coco and what they did together. They did win a slam together. Pierre Riba was on the team as well, but they may have had a very short window to do things together. And she's evolved past that. Evolve. We're going to come back to that later on.
There was, of course, a lot of discourse about the Iga Coco match and the shoveling gesture and Iga's response and the handshake and everything. I feel like I have very milquetoast, bland takes on this whole thing.
So you're not going to give them?
No, I will. Firstly, there was this question over, you know, Iga taking a medical timeout and then Coco doing that celebration being insensitive to Iga. Both are just nothing sandwiches, in my opinion. Then there was this sort of minor controversy about Iga taking a medical timeout and having the trainer tell her, you're not actually injured, so I can't do anything. I don't actually think that is malicious or gamesmanship. If I'm looking at it with the benefit of the doubt, I'm saying a lot of times athletes or anybody don't know how to identify their pain, right? Something may be painful and you may think, oh, I need to see the trainer, something's wrong, but maybe it's just extreme stress or fatigue or whatever. Like, in the moment, you may not have the wherewithal to wade through that.
Contrarily, I think athletes are most equipped to tell when something's wrong with their body.
Okay.
But the difference here is they may not be able to tell what exactly it is, because non-injury symptoms can manifest the same way.
Okay.
And we've seen at the start of this season so many players exercising an abundance of caution. Why in this high stakes match should be just a lollygag, yippity yeehaw, United Cup hit and giggle, but it's the top women players in the world in a final with stakes outside of this. There's bragging rights, there's pride, there's the head-to-head, there's momentum, there's statements that people want to make.
Iga takes these team events very seriously when she's playing for Poland. And last year, this was the 500 title on her ranking.
Thank you. Now I don't quite remember my train of thought. I think where I was going with that is if Iga feels a little niggle, then I get the impulse to have it checked out right away, regardless of how inconvenient it may be to Coco at that point in the match, having the momentum and being one game away from winning the title. Because the stakes going forward are so high. Like, the Australian Open is a little over a week away. You don't want to push through that one game, possibly play a third set and injure yourself further when it doesn't have to be as big as it could be.
Right. She's been criticized a lot for the bathroom breaks after sets, but she's not really somebody who uses medical timeouts tactically. So I don't know. I'm more inclined to give her the benefit of the doubt here. What I do reject is this idea that, oh, Coco shouldn't have done that shoveling gesture because Iga was obviously injured. But then she told you in the press conference that she was not injured. And my take on that is Iga sometimes needs to just not say things. And I know that's strange from people who have kind of relied on athletes to say things in press conferences and stuff, but sometimes you're just giving away too much.
People read into her comments that she was just tired and that she wasn't injured as her admitting to, in the moment, being like, oh, I'm tired, I'm going to take a few minutes here to try and recover.
Right.
As opposed to Iga thinking, wow, something could be wrong. Ooh, turns out nothing's wrong. You know, there was a jump to the worst her in that moment, which I don't necessarily think is the case. I think we can afford some grace here. Granted, I understand why people don't want to give that grace.
Oh, because she was very salty at the end, of course.
I'm talking about many other instances. Oh,
because of the other things.
Yeah. And then this celebration, first, I think all sports celebrations are mostly juvenile. I don't like them. You know,
yeah, I knew you were going there.
The fist pumping, the this or that I get, you know, but to be coming up with dances and shoveling and all this other stuff, it's the worst of team sport culture. It's the worst of jock culture. Like, I don't like it at all. And I understand if you think I'm being geriatric in that
belief.
But for me, viscerally, instinctively, it's a no.
No, I mean, personally, I think it's kind of cringe, but my opinion doesn't really matter. It was inspired by Dennis Kudla. Taylor Fritz did it. What pisses me off, of course, is when people say, oh, the Americans, and then list three black players, have no class because of this. Like, okay, where were you when Taylor Fritz did it? Did you care?
Ultimately, I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think it registers a blip on the Richter scale of tennis fuckery. Like, no. Get a grip.
No. And then so they have kind of this drive-by handshake. Also don't really care about that. It's not really interesting to me. The thing that was strange and enduring is Danielle Collins' distaste for Iga Swiatek.
Somehow, despite not playing any matches, I don't think she played any matches at this tournament. I could be wrong. If she did, maybe one match. Her role at this event was to be a videographer, to enjoy herself.
Twerk team.
Right? I mean, you get to practice with top players. To me, it's the ideal preparation for the season. You go down to Sydney, you play United Cup, you don't actually play United Cup, but you're there for it. And then you go on to play Adelaide the next week ahead of the Australian Open. It's the perfect entryway for me. That's how I would do it.
Mm. Okay. So they have the team handshake after the final. USA wins, beats Poland. And Danielle walks by Iga and makes this very dismissive face, like rolls her eyes and laughs. This is a one-sided thing, right? Danielle really dislikes this woman. And I don't know why. Maybe it has something to do with her belief that Iga is generally insincere or fake. Maybe there's something in the locker room that happened and she doesn't like it. It's more amusing to me than anything. And people are like very, very upset about it. Like, Danielle is bullying her. I don't really think that's what's happening.
I totally get why fans of Iga would be annoyed and upset by this.
Oh, sure. Like, if I were a fan of Iga, I would say, like, wow, she's so petty. Like, what is the beef here? But overall, everybody wants WTA drama. This is what it looks like. Drama is often very mean-spirited. Like,
Sure, I think this goes a bit too far.
Okay.
I think this, in this instance, is unprovoked. And that's where it becomes cringe, if not a bit more. Because what did Iga do to her specifically in that moment?
In that moment, nothing.
In that moment, I don't know.
Right.
I mean,
in their lives, I have no idea.
But I'm also the person who is in the 99 percentile of grudge holding. So
what?
I understand if Miss Collins needs to hold this to the grave.
Clearly. She put out an Insta story the next day and says, sometimes I just gotta laugh at myself. Didn't know if you guys noticed this, but new year, same me. Overall, this whole thing is just amusing to me because it feels so one-sided, like she's screaming into the abyss.
Yelena Rybakina was at the United Cup. Kazakhstan made the semifinals. She had a pretty good week on the court.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the news that will linger from the first week of the year. It stems from her right out the gate announcing that Stefano Vukov will be back in her coaching setup in 2025. And if you are like us, you are probably like, what the fuck?
Yeah. She announced this on January 1st on Instagram. And she said, I am excited to announce that Stefano will be joining the team for the 2025 season. Now, she didn't say in what capacity. She didn't say clearly that he will be a coach, but that he will be joining the team.
That's a fair assumption, that he will be
right
on
right.
the coaching team.
And I think most of us assumed that's what it meant, including the WTA.
Goran Ivanisevic was already hired by Rybakina after she initially split with Vukov at the end of last year. So he was with her for the United Cup. And then this news drops.
Yes.
Penny, for his thoughts.
Rybakina hired Goran in November. He, of course, was extremely successful with Djokovic for many years. It was a huge get for her, for anyone. The Athletic reported that Goran was, quote, blindsided by the Vukov announcement and that the relationship with Rybakina has become strained as a result.
That is per Matt Futterman in the Athletic.
And a few anonymous sources. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, let's go back to the 2024 U.S. Open. Rybakina had an amazing start to 2024. And then things started happening, right? Injuries, the results were trailing off. And then at the U.S. Open, everything came to a head. She had a very public separation from Vukov, her coach. She pulled out of the U.S. Open. Back in 2023, a few public figures, namely Renee Stubbs and Pam Shriver, called out the way that Stefano Vukov spoke to her during matches, in public, right, in full view of everybody. So it is fair to wonder, well, if he feels this free to speak to her like a dog in public, how does he treat her behind closed doors? At the time, those two were slammed for what they said.
Rybakina makes this announcement on January 1st. On January 2nd, the WTA clarifies that Vukov has been provisionally suspended pending an investigation and will not be given a credential to the Australian Open. Which makes me wonder whether Rybakina was trying to get ahead of this news in some way. Yeah. She had to know what was going on behind the scenes, right?
Mm-hmm. But based on the Athletic's reporting, Rybakina knew that Vukov was not allowed. He wasn't going to give a credential. She knew that an investigation was ongoing because it's almost over. It's almost concluded. And so you might see this announcement as kind of forcing the WTA's hand to see, well, what are they going to do? Or are they really going to deny a credential?
Mm-hmm. In this scenario, Rybakina has claimed nothing untoward has happened, that she has no issues with Vukov. And how that plays out with a WTA investigation, I don't know. What does the WTA do if they find something he did specifically to her objectionable, but she's okay with it?
Mm-hmm. Now, to be clear, the investigation is based on complaints from other people about Vukov's conduct. We don't know what the conduct is. We don't even know what has been alleged. It's still private. It's under investigation. Vukov said, quote, definitely never abused anyone. I remember in 2024, and apologies to you, I did not put this on the agenda because I just found it.
To me?
But Sonia Tartakova was quoted talking about the Rybakina situation. And as you know, she's a journalist and a TV presenter who is very close with a number of the Russian and Kazakh tennis players. She said that Yelena is under, quote, heavy pressure from Vukov all the time. She said that insults constantly fall from Vukov's lips against Yelena. And she said she was basically in psychic turmoil during the U.S. Open.
Where I was going before with questioning what the WTA can actually do here is, okay, they may feel they can't really do anything if Rybakina says everything is okay or there is no complaint on her end. But to what you're saying, what if somebody else outside of her team has allegations of some sort against him based on his behavior toward them, mm-hmm. toward people outside of the team, just the way he generally moves through the WTA habitus?
Oh, no. Not Bourdieu.
You get what I'm saying?
I do. Okay. And so what if that player or that staff member witnessed something that they found objectionable? What if it happened to them?
What if he was really out of pocket to a WTA employee?
Right. And you've seen how he acts on TV. There's no alleging about it. He doesn't act nicely.
But again, this is all speculation.
Right.
That Tartakova stuff that you apologized to me for not putting on this agenda, it was on previous agendas. And we didn't touch it because it felt too speculative at the moment that we'd be just out here on the podcast, yappa, 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 without anything concrete to add to the mess.
Right. Because a lot of people close to the situation don't even know what's going on.
Right.
Literally. Mm-hmm. So a number of accounts in the past few days have gone on their, like, I told you so. We knew about this back in September. And I find that kind of behavior really objectionable and really juvenile. Because, well, what did you know? Tell me, if you knew something, tell us what you knew. You don't quote tweet yourself sharing news that everybody knew at the time and just say, yeah, we knew. So share it with the class or keep it on the playground, please. Because there are a lot of insinuations in those told you so's.
It's giving high school. It's giving a tremendous lack of emotional intelligence. It's giving maleness. It's giving sport maleness. And it's really signaling to me that you don't really care about the alleged or perceived abuse in whatever form it's going on. You just care about being first or being right or getting some kind of credit for this. What credit is there to be gleaned from this situation?
Like, other than reputational. Like, if you believe there is abuse going on, you should not be gloating about knowing before other people knew, right?
So, as always, this is just something to keep an eye out for. It's a developing story. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. I want to say that we have been asking, begging the WTA to work on safeguarding, to protect its players for the past few years. And this is what it looks like. You might not like what it looks like, but this is safeguarding in action. And if they find the allegations to be baseless, then Vukov will be reinstated. But nobody has an inalienable right to be a coach on the WTA tour, right? It's not a human right. So they investigate complaints.
New year, new drugs.
Well, sort of.
It's a case. And Max Purcell turned himself in.
Yeah. Max Purcell, recent U.S. Open champion in doubles with Jordan Thompson, was found in breach of the anti-doping program because he used a, quote, prohibited method. And he actually volunteered this information to the ITIA, I guess in hopes of getting a lesser sentence, because he knew what happened was bad, mm-hmm. right? He said he goes to this medical clinic and he's going to get this IV infusion of vitamins. He told them that I'm a professional athlete. It's really important that it stays under 100 milliliters. And apparently it exceeded 100 milliliters and he knew that he would have been found out.
Mm-hmm. And if you're relying on us for your drugs coverage, we're late to this. You know, we're yes. not always on time. We're not always there when
but
you
I
call.
But I give you my all.
Exactly.
Oh, sorry. I jumped the gun on yes. that.
My point in saying this is supplement your drugs coverage because...
With actual journalists, you mean?
Right. Because as soon as this happened and I was wondering, well, what the hell does a prohibited method mean in all of this? Because that was new for me.
Yeah, because they always say either prohibited substance or prohibited method. So what's a method?
And Ben Rothenberg was on it right away. So one way you can supplement your drugs coverage is to...
Subscribe to Bounces.
Subscribe to Bounces, and you'll get all that stuff as well.
Max is currently serving a provisional suspension. We have no idea how long the suspension will last. His doubles partner, Jordan Thompson, said that this was, quote, a bit of a joke. To get suspended for that, when there are other people who have done far worse and sometimes just get a slap on the wrist, it's a bit of a joke.
Mm-hmm. Players are big mad about anything yeah. drugs-related now. It's a world of chaos and confusion out there. It's the wild, wild west. And people are being very vocal about it now. And there's a lot of uninformed loudness about it, too.
There is. I do understand, like, why fellow players would be incensed, right? The guard is up because your two best, some of the best players in the world, Sinner and Świątek, have had this anti-doping thing. And we basically didn't hear a word about it until it was fully settled. I would understand why players are, like, not really feeling the anti-doping program right now. Technically, all of those things happened according to the rules. What I don't accept is, like, oh, well, maybe we should raise the threshold. This is what I've heard from some people, right? Raise the threshold.
Anybody
on
in particular?
No. actually, a much bigger podcast than ours.
Serving very wild takes.
I just don't agree with his take on the anti-doping program because, I mean, you test for traces, essentially, traces of banned substances. How do you get around that? How do you raise the required limit? Because sometimes these substances are leaving a player's bloodstream. Sometimes it can indicate intentional doping, but they're in incredibly tiny quantities.
So the 0.06 tectogram, billionth molecule.
Billionth, trillionth, whatever.
There were 22,000 million molecules 10 days ago.
Exactly.
We don't know.
Like, this is how doping works for some substances.
And substances are masking agents. They seem innocuous, like, oh my God, why are you being clocked for that? Well, some people take it to mask other more insidious things that's going on. It's not a simple process. There's not a simple solution.
And historically, well-connected players have been far ahead of the doping authorities in being able to dodge testing, right? So making testing less rigorous is really not, it's not the goal if you're trying to find dopers, genuine dopers. But the story itself, right? All of the context and the circumstances around a positive test of a picogram, for example, that's important.
Meanwhile, we have Nick Kyrgios out here bullying a child.
Oh, not bullying. I knew when he came for the Nepo baby, it would be all over for a lot of people. Really. A 16-year-old Nepo baby at that. Women, forget it. You know, when he calls his exes sluts and stuff like that, totally fine. But he came for Cruz Hewitt. Are we ready to go there yet? Or?
Sure.
Okay. You know, Nick has been very, very online lately and just behaving a lot like Elon Musk. Right, he's had an obsession with Yannick Sinner after the doping case, a really deep obsession. And the way that he moves online has caused problems in his professional life. Right, he's not going to be working for ESPN during the Australian Open.
To which he says it's because, well, peanut, potato, I'm playing singles and doubles, so obviously I can't.
Right, well, that hasn't stopped other players/commentators before.
Well, he plans on winning the thing, so he's going to be playing for 2 weeks.
Okay. Whether or not that's connected, no idea. But, you know, coming after his ex, Anna Kalinskaya, making insulting remarks about her, just the relentless near stalking of Yannick Sinner. Again, a one-sided beef, right? Yannick has said nothing to you. He has pretended like you do not exist. But what it brings me to is, I think we mentioned this a few times last year, feeling and just like cooling on Naomi because of her dogged, determined alliance with Nick Kyrgios.
Platformed by signing him to her talent agency, Evolve.
Yep, which is co-owned by her agent, Stewart. Mm-hmm.
In the last couple months, she commented on Nick saying, quote, I am really drawn to people who are unapologetic about who they are and aren't afraid to show all aspects of themselves. I also think there's a side to Nick few people see, but I can say he has a very big heart. And for him, giving back is really important. And that is a quality I admire about him.
And you know what? I bet he is a multidimensional person like all human beings, right? I'm sure there are many sides to him, but the side that he presents to us is that of a narcissist and just like a really mean-spirited person, mm-hmm. right? Naomi, mental health is very important to her. Nick has spoken about that. But what about like bullying? Is that not important? Is it only important when it happens to you and not other people?
The Cruz Hewitt thing, Cruz was pictured with Yannick Sinner. I guess that was posted on Instagram and then Nick commented a couple times.
Three times, in fact.
Underneath it, saying, quote, love you, Cruz, but this is wild, and then followed up with cooked post with a needle emoji.
Yeah, thought we were boys with a number of heartbreak emojis.
Again, this is a child.
This is deranged behavior.
Right. And when he's called on it, he says it's a joke.
It's always a joke, right? It's not that serious. I don't know his relationship with Cruz Hewitt. I don't even know Cruz Hewitt, right? I don't get in children's business.
I'm just annoyed that I have to see Leighton Hewitt more. Like, till right. I'm 60 years old. Like, at every freaking slam.
Right. But getting back to Naomi for a second. When she said that about Nick, something clicked again, right? Sometimes I forget this. Is that these people, they relate to each other, right? Famous and wealthy athletes, they relate to each other. They don't relate to us. So, like, stop asking them to. They get each other, in a way that we don't, and our objections with how this person behaves does not register with her.
Mm-hmm. Sadly, we are stuck with a heightened presence of Nick Kyrgios for the totality of this Australian swing. It's mm-hmm. quite overwhelming.
Yeah, what's galling is that this really nasty and persistent behavior is rewarded, right? I think our culture has changed. I think tennis media has changed in a way that they actually don't even care anymore if Nick has been redeemed. They just care that they believe he brings eyeballs, right? They've stopped the whole like rehabilitation because they realize it's not going to happen. So they've dropped the pretense. They do not care. This behavior is rewarded, right? This behavior gets you to be the president of the United States.
Jensen Brooksby let the world know that he has autism.
Yeah, this was a very brave thing for him to do, especially in this climate. And I'll talk about that in a second. But Jensen shared on IG, and he also shared this interview he did with Howard Fendrick for the Associated Press.
He said, quote, "I was diagnosed on the severe end of the spectrum as a very young child. I was nonverbal until the age of 4. It took 40 hours a week of intensive ABA therapy. And for those who don't know, that is applied behavior analysis. My mother never gave up and did everything to help me. I wouldn't be where I am today without her. I'm lucky to have parents who refuse to give up. I decided it was time to tell my story. I hope this inspires families to never give up. The last 23 months have been very tough on me. Surround yourselves with good people and never give up. I'm grateful to be returning to pro tennis in Australia. See you soon! Exclamation. Heart emoji.
You might remember that Jensen was suspended for 18 months from playing due to whereabouts violations, which means that you basically failed to be at the place you said you were going to be 3 times in a 12-month span for the anti-doping authorities to come test you. And it was reduced by about 9 months via an appeal that he filed to the ITIA. And at the time, they said that new information had come to light, and we didn't know what that was. And technically, we still don't know what it was.
But we can infer.
Right. Fendrick spoke to Brooksby's behavior analyst, Michelle Wagner, who confirmed that she had been consulted during the appeal. And to the reporter, she confirmed that Brooksby's autism would impact his executive function. And what that means, very simply, is the skills that we use to manage everyday tasks, like planning, problem solving, decision making, adapting to new situations. So you can see that his disability may have contributed to his missing being at those whereabouts when he was supposed to be.
Or taking the necessary steps to make sure he was there.
Right. And I want to say, I use the word disability on purpose. Disability is not a bad word. Like, we shouldn't be afraid of using the word. Autism is a neurodevelopmental disorder that can be characterized by challenges with social interaction, communication, sensory processing, repetitive behavior, and sometimes restricted interests. It's a spectrum disorder, which means it can manifest in many, many different ways. There is some controversy over whether it's neurodevelopmental, whether it's a disability. I won't really get into that. All that to say, I think this takes a lot of courage from Jensen, especially in a time when I think ableism is on the rise. You have very important people mocking disabled people, using the R word very freely. I mean, Elon Musk used it today on Twitter, and he is actually an autistic person.
This is something that I thought we had done away with. I learned this in very early in high school.
Oh, yeah.
In a different country.
Mm-hmm. But now people use it for the thrill of it because they know it's hurtful. And I know I have been tough on Jensen in the past, right? Mm-hmm. I have not been particularly understanding of his behavior.
Same.
And I have to like admit that and put it on the record and say, okay, sometimes we don't know what's going on.
And so we were wrong.
Yep.
Okay.
Was I supposed to say that?
Yes. That's part of the apology process.
I mean, but you don't always have to like someone's behavior to understand it.
No, you know? But in this specific instance, if we're doing all that as a preamble, maybe we got quite a few things wrong with him because we didn't know.
Right. This is the year of the João.
João gay? and João Next Gen.
I'm sure they love to be referred to that way. Both Joaos. João is a Portuguese name. Both of the guys we're talking about are Brazilian. There are about, I would say, 15 to 20,000 Joaos in Toronto.
This is news that has felt so far away for so long. Every time we do a mailbag, folks ask us, when do you think we'll get an openly gay player? What are the conditions that need to be met for that to happen? We are here. We have an out and proud, openly gay male tennis player.
Yeah, because for years, the women were doing the heavy lifting, right? The lesbians were the only ones out here. And this may not be the player you asked for, right? Maybe you wanted a top 10 player. But this is a player who was brave enough to put this on his Instagram and say, happy birthday, happy life, I love you so much. In Portuguese, of course. To his very hot boyfriend.
Is that the important
really,
part?
Really, let's be serious here. His boyfriend is the Brazilian actor Gui Sampaio Ricardo. And a number of ATP players have shown their support, including Bruno Suarez, Thiago Monteiro. There were a few notable absences, of course. The self-proclaimed Nazi.
Oh, wow.
Didn't expect, you know, support from that person.
Have you scoured all of their socials? That's a bold statement.
I don't know. I feel like they've probably been taken down for hate speech.
Damn. Starting out the year...
I should clarify. Allegedly. He's the self-proclaimed descendant of Nazis.
I'll let you edit this part. João is currently ranked 400 in singles with a career high of 259. He's won one challenger title in doubles and made three challenger finals in singles. He also beat that descendant that you're talking about for an ITF title in 2018.
The other João we were introing, João Fonseca, was the champion of the Next Gen Finals, which happened pretty much after our season concluded last year. It was right before Christmas. We were busy recording the Rafa episode. João is 18 years old. He was the number 8 seed at the Next Gen Finals. He won all 5 of his matches, including the number 1 seed Fis, Tien twice, Van Asche, and Jakub Menšík. Just a great, great run, undefeated. And he is by far the lowest ranked player to ever win the Next Gen Finals at number 145.
That first win he had over Lerner Tien, it was a demolition. Mm. Granted, it's what, first to four?
Yeah.
It's not quite the same as regular tennis, but that was as lopsided a Next Gen scoreline as you'll ever see.
He followed that up with the Canberra Challenger title, so he has won 10 matches in a row.
Allow me a moment to get petty and messy here.
Not you.
Because I can, and I have a tennis podcast. And the moratorium on being unnecessarily messy ends after the 10th season. Did you know that? So we can do and say whatever we want now without any fear of anything.
Was anything stopping us before?
Don't pretend like there weren't things that hit the cutting room floor. There are things on this show.
That will.
And one in the very opening I had to tell you, it's staying in.
I'll keep that.
Okay. Somebody shared our GoFundMe on one of the socials recently and said...
Thank you.
A million thanks. And said, please donate. These guys are awesome, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody responded to the effect of, Shant, I'm blocked. Don't know why. And it took everything in my willpower to not unblock and respond to tell why.
Yeah, yeah.
It just felt like...
Because we don't do that anymore.
But why? Let me just do it on air. Ma'am, it's for the overt, blatant, unmistakable transphobia that you direct to presumably a lot of people, but in this case, specifically toward Aryna Sabalenka.
Right.
It's the number one player in the world.
You use a transgender slur to refer to Sabalenka.
And like, then turn routine. Her last name into a slur.
Right.
Adding something to it.
Like,
you can figure it out.
What more do you need?
Like, wild. Wild.
There was more to that comment, though. Do you remember?
Tell me more.
Oh, we go up.
Oh, yes.
We go up for Nick Kyrgios and Djokovic. And I'll tell you, I've been accused of a lot of things, but never that. Never that.
This is a level of delusion scarcely seen. And we live in an era of wild delusion.
I have filed a defamation lawsuit because I would never support them.
I feel better now that that has been committed to air.
I felt great before and I feel great after.
Continuing our tradition of opening the season with our predictions with respect to player rankings for the year, we're going to perform that miracle right now.
What's the miracle?
Attempting to get some of these right.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like elevating through energy transfers.
Well, maybe that too. How it works is that we each pick three WTA players, three ATP players, one each from three categories. Players ranked 1 to 50, 51 to 100, and 100 and above, or 100 and higher. You've been confused by that in the past.
I have, yes.
And the idea is this is a player that's going to have a breakout year. So if they're ranked 12, you could still pick them to break out and they could be number one by the end of the year. The odds of that happening or you being able to make that case, if they don't, maybe not the best pick.
Sure.
It's a better look for you if you pick the number 50 ranked player and they end up cracking the top 20.
Right. Right.
Okay. So I'm going to let you go first because I may have to chop somebody because I suspect we're going to have a few of the same players here. Start with the WTA. Who are your three players?
Rebecca Shramkova.
Okay.
That's a pretty, it's a basic pick, right? It's an easy pick because she won a title at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. Next up, the fifth, what is this, 51 to 100?
Yes.
Ashton Kruger.
How dare you?
No.
This is somebody I've been talking about on the podcast for a long time. This is my person. This is not your person.
Well, you may have to chop her from
yours. I was the one watching Sloane and Ashlyn in Charleston.
I was.
You were there for one match. Yeah. I watched several.
Wow. Amazing.
Disgusting.
I had to follow Dasha around, okay?
Okay.
And my out of the top 100 pick, I believe I've picked her before, but it's Marina Stakusic, the Canadian.
Okay. My three, I'm going to go with two for the top 50. And either or, I feel compelled to pick Clara Towson again. I've been on the Towson train for quite a while.
You've found your reward this past week.
And also Elena Avanesyan had some good results recently. Also, I first became aware of her watching her live in Berlin.
Yes.
Summer of 2022 when she was just having her first burst of good results.
Mm-hmm. You know, we also saw Polina Kudermetova at Berlin. She lost to Rybakina on the center court.
Did not remember that at all.
Yeah.
My 51 to 100 player, Ashlyn Kruger.
Okay.
And then 100 and above, I feel like I may have picked her last year. Sarah Bielek?
You have definitely picked her before. Maybe not last year.
She's still only 18. So
maybe it was last year.
Yeah. So I'm going back to the well again. On the ATP side, who are your picks?
Jordan Thompson.
Oh.
To have a big singles breakthrough.
Okay. A certain listener of ours will be very happy to hear that.
Yeah. Mustache and all. The 51 to 100, Shevchenko.
Okay.
And then...
Based on the United Cup result?
And more.
Okay.
I was very tempted to pick you-know-who, ADF, because he's outside of the top 50 right now.
I am legitimately shocked.
I know.
This is the first year...
I resisted.
This is the first year since probably 2016 that you haven't picked
basically
ADF.
Basically, like, since he was invented, yes. And then outside of the top 100, going super basic here, João Fonseca.
I knew you were going to do that.
Sorry.
So he was one of my either ors for that. So instead of João, I'm going to go with Lerner Tien.
Okay.
Thoroughly enjoyed watching him play mixed doubles at the US Open. That's from 100 and above. From 51 to 100, I'm working backwards here. I'm going to go with one of Gabriel Diallo. Or Bu Inchekete.
Who?
Bu Inchekete, Chinese player. He's the Chinese number three, I believe.
This is a big gap in my knowledge.
And top 50, I'm going with Jinchen Shang, Jerry Shang.
I was tempted to pick him too. That's a really good pick, I think.
So we shall see how that all plays out. And just when you think you've come to the end of the episode, James, I'm putting you on the spot because you are going to play the age game right now.
Oh, okay.
What do you think the age game is?
Because I'm usually really good at guessing like actors' ages whenever you ask me.
That is actually very true, but that wasn't the impetus. It was just something that came to me.
Okay.
While I was looking up this, who I was going to pick.
Oh, okay.
From, you know, 1 to 50, 51 to 100, the ages are right beside it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was surprised by a couple people and I was like, let me see if this one over here will have a good time with this. So you have your little sheet here that I'm giving you. Do you have your pen?
Yep.
How it's going to work is you see the your worksheet there. What you tell me what you think is going to happen. Describe the worksheet.
Okay, so there are three lists blank. They're headed 22, 23, 24, and there's like a list of 1 through 4 under each age.
So if you want to play along at home, I suggest you make your own list right now. Three categories, 22, 23, 24. There's going to be 4 players that you have to place under each category. It could be an ATP player. It could be a WTA player. You look thoroughly disgusted by
like,
this game.
This is impossible.
Okay. So I think how it works best, if I'm just going to give you a name and you quickly write it where you think it should go.
I don't have to come up with them on my own.
No.
Oh, I thought I was going to have
to. No, I'm going to feed you the names of players and you put them where you think they should go. And then at the end, I'll give you some time to see if you want to switch things around a little bit. And then I'll tell you how you did.
This is not a visual medium, so it might be hard to follow. But think of three columns, 22, 23, 24. And then there are players underneath. Mm-hmm. You have to place them in the correct age.
I think the folks got it.
Okay, I'm just, you know, reiterating.
First player, Sebastian Korda.
Okay.
Second player, Emma Navarro. Alicia.
Wait. Okay, go on.
Alicia Parks. Lorenzo Musetti.
Musetti.
Jack Draper. Félix Auger-Aliassime. Now, keep in mind, I may be trying to fool you here. Maybe they made the list because I thought they were a certain age and like, wow, damn.
Wait, all these players have a spot, right?
They all have a spot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you have to decide if Félix is 22, 23, or 24.
Okay.
Amanda Anisimova.
Okay, she... Can I think through... Can I show my work?
If you'd like.
Okay, so she made the French Open semis in 2019. I think she was like 17.
Okay.
Okay, so
what month of the year was she born in?
Well, how am I supposed to know? I think she's 23.
Zhang Qinwen.
Oh, God, I should really know that. Okay, I think I know.
Gabriel Diallo.
Okay.
Bianca Andreescu.
2019 US Open champion.
How old was she then?
I think she's 20.
How old was she when she was destroying your life?
Yeah, I think she's 23 because I have no slots left for 24.
Leila Annie Fernandez.
Oh, okay.
And finally, Clara Towson.
Oh, shit.
Oh, is it all fucked up for you
now?
No,
I think that's right. No, I think I got it.
You think you got it?
I wonder if I got any of these right.
Are you ready to lock your answers in?
Yes.
You don't want to make changes.
Is that from like a game show you watch?
The one that you were on?
Oh.
Well, that's a little bit of body serve background
body
history
serve lore.
There.
Forget you ever heard that. Yep.
I'm sure you'll get a few messages in your DMs this week. Somebody must have the tape out there somewhere.
No.
So you're locked in. Your answers are locked in. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you tell me... Oh, this is going to get big. This is interesting.
This is going to be bad, isn't it?
So 22.
Okay, so the 22-year-olds, I think it's Draper, Diallo, Fernandez, and Navarro. Wait, I thought Raducanu... Fucking Emma's. You said Navarro.
I said Navarro.
And I was thinking Raducanu.
Well, yes, you fucked yourself.
Ugh.
You probably just destroyed your whole game.
I know.
Not giving you the grace to change that.
No.
Navarro is wrong.
She's 24.
She's 24.
Yeah.
Draper is wrong. He's 23.
I feel like Draper's been 22 for the past 5 years.
Diallo is wrong.
Oh, wow.
He's 23. And Fernandez is your only correct 22-year-old.
Oh, I got one right. Well, by P-O-E, this is really bad. Like the rest of it, you know.
This is terrible.
Do you even have to complete the rest?
I'm enjoying this quite a bit. 23, let me sneak over here. You have Alicia Parks.
Yep.
Wrong.
She's what?
She's, you tell me.
I don't know.
Well, try and redeem yourself.
I am in my 30s, barely, and what is the difference between 22 and 24? Really?
Be that as it may, you're a tennis podcaster. Mm-hmm. You see what's going on in front of you on the page now. Where would you put her if she's not 23? Well,
I feel like she's older than we think. I think she's 24.
She is 24.
Okay.
You've got Amanda Nisimova. Very good math. The math was mathing on that
one. Oh, good.
That's correct.
I got that one. Okay.
Bianca? You've got Bianca Andreescu. That is incorrect.
How old is she? She's 24.
She's 24.
Yeah.
And then you've got Clara Towson.
She's 22, isn't she?
She's 22. So you've got one correct from the first two columns.
No, no, I have two.
As in one each.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You're operating at 25%. Yeah.
And then the 24-year-olds.
24-year-olds. You've got Sebastian Korda. Incorrect.
He is...
That is correct.
27.
I misspoke.
Oh.
He is correct. You've got Lorenzo. This was the one that shook me. He's 22 years old.
You know what the problem is? He just sped up every step of his life. He already has a child. He has a wife. He already cut his hair. I mean...
I was convinced he was 24, 25.
Yeah. He's 22?
He's 22.
Okay.
Felix is correct.
Okay.
And the final one you have there is Jung Chin Wen. That is incorrect.
She's 23?
She's 22.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Wow. Imagine how little I achieved at the age of 22 compared
to
her.
33%.
33%. I can do math.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm fine with that. It was a totally off-the-wall quiz. You know, the problem is that they change ages every year.
Is that what happened to you?
Yeah. You know, they get older.
Mm, interesting. That is episode one of 2025. What is this? Episode 367 overall? Somewhere in that vicinity?
Mm-hmm. You know, season 11 is where American Idol really started cooking.
Really?
I'm kidding. But like Gunsmoke season 11, wow. Slapped.
Grey's Anatomy season 11?
Oof, I have no idea what happened.
I wonder what happened on season 11 of The Young and the Restless. Victor Newman was
up
to.
Your family was up to something.
What are your hopes for this season on the body serve and in tennis life?
A Coco Gauff calendar year Grand Slam, obviously.
Okay. Shoot for the stars.
Yeah, why not? My hopes. My hopes for, like, my life, that's none of your business.
Your life in tennis.
Oh, okay. I really, really hope we can go to Wimbledon. If that happens, that will be, like, the year fulfilled for me.
I'd like to go to Charleston and Wimbledon this
yes,
year.
Yes, I'm really hoping to go to Charleston. It looks like a number of people are going. Mm-hmm. People who reached out and said, like, you know, your experience in Charleston sounded really cool. Ben Navarro.
You still have an email to respond to.
Bring it on, Ben Navarro. Like, we are recruiting people.
Uncle Ben?
No.
I would like Carlos Alcaraz to fire his barber.
Wow.
That's one of my...
Not Victor Barber.
That's one of my goals.
Do you think that Victor Barber knows that he rhymes with Victor Garber, the famous Canadian actor? Do you think that's on purpose?
I saw you talking about this in a group chat recently, and I just thought you were making a joke. That's his actual name?
That's his handle.
His handle is Victor Barber.
Yeah. The tennis people, they know him. He's like Riga Nails.
His most recent haircut is perfectly fine.
We've definitely seen worse.
Right, but I don't get why the lining is not, you know, the line? Mm-hmm. It's not even. It doesn't look like.
Well, did he go to a black barber? No. Clearly not.
Okay. I would like to have many more Iga Coco matches this year.
Okay.
That's the one matchup that I really want to see. I know people are heavily invested in Iga Rybakina, Sabalenka Rybakina, all of a sudden, doesn't do it as much for me. On the men's side, I'm on Team Carlos at the start of this year.
Yeah,
I just am. And like you, Wimbledon will be a big goal this year to finally attend a second distinct, unique slam event.
Mm-hmm.
We've been going to the US Open for the last few years. Crossing off another one is a goal, possibly followed by the French next year.
Oh,
the goal is to do all four, right? I know The one that we really want to do is Australia, but that is just such a task at the start of the year.
Yeah, like more than anything, that's what I want to do. I just don't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's just such an endeavor. But we have never entered the United Kingdom. You know, been to the Republic of Ireland.
No.
Once or twice. But hoping to go to SW19.
If you've enjoyed our season opener, if you've enjoyed the body serve over the years and are able to contribute, check out our GoFundMe. You can find everything GoFundMe and body serve related at linktree.com/thebodyserve.
Thanks for listening. Really looking forward to the second decade of the body serve.
My name is Jonathan. Tennis John on Blue Sky.
No underscore, yeah. And I'm James at Elliot JMR on Blue Sky.
Two L's. Two T's.
Till next time.
Thank you very much.